This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 of Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also up on television on TSN 4. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes this week alongside Dave Pullen. Craig Button's going to join us in a couple of minutes to get his thoughts on the extension of the CBA, the return to play, teams having training camp beginning on Monday and then making the trip to either Edmonton or Toronto. We've already seen teams travel to Orlando, Pooley, and begin hub life as the NBA tries to restart their season. The Raptors arrived today. I'm guessing the Sixers are going to arrive at some point because there is video circulating the internet, and it's of one Joel Embiid, and he's ready for the hub because he's got the full hazmat suit on, and Joel Embiid, he's taking this virus seriously.
You know, it's brilliant, head to toe. Forget the mask. He is a mask. He's entirely head to toe covered in his white spacesuit. It's brilliant.
And for those wondering, yes, they do make hazmat suits for individuals that large.
I was going to say 7-foot hazmat suit.
Or it could be two that are sewed together. I don't know.
I'm sure they're on sale, right? Because nobody else has bought them. And, you know, it's respect in a way, but it's, you know, there's a little bit of fear with some players about restarting, and they've expressed that fear, and you know, and they're making it known. But if anyone is questioning, and they're a Sixers fan or an NBA fan, if they're questioning whether they should wear a mask when they go to the grocery store,
yeah,
check out this setup right here.
Yeah. And we're showing the video on TSN4.
It's head to toe, and he's got somebody helping him with it, and they've got a mask on, full head, white suit, head to toe, 7 foot tall. He is not going to take a chance. Well, power to him.
You and many other have said that just getting to the hub might be the toughest obstacle for all these leagues. So
that's the valuable time.
Let's get Embiid in there for the 76ers, right?
Yeah, that's the critical time. There's no question about it. It's getting them there where you can control it. And, you know, I mean, there are managers in pro sports that would love to have their players from the first day of the season till the last day of the season with nothing else to do, no distractions, total control, absolutely. In the old NFL, you went to a college and you moved into that college for 6 weeks, and there's legendary stories about the old 1970s Oakland Raiders sneaking out of their dorms at night, you know, dormitories with no air conditioning and guys sharing rooms, and, you know, so different from the way things are done today in pro sports. But it used to be a six-week training camp. That's what it was. You went to camp. You know, just before I arrived with the Flyers, they went to Portland, Maine for training camp. That's what they did. And they were, you know, encased for a couple of weeks, and they trained, and that's what happened. And so, you know, and believe me, there are managers that would love to have that control from the start of the year to the end, sure, without a question.
We talked about this yesterday, and, you know, Mike Johnson said he needed like a week to be ready in terms of a training camp. He said like the hands and the timing, that would come a little bit later. But in terms of being in game shape, because that was one of the big topics of the day, he needed like a week. Well, how long did you need?
First of all, I didn't skate at all in the summer. Didn't put them on once. And put them on about a week before training camp, and, you know, would go out, captain's practice, if you will, and buzz around. But felt really fresh when camp started. I wanted usually four of the – we played 10 exhibition games then, of preseason games. I wanted four of them. I wanted four of them for my timing, for my, you know, just what MJ was talking about, the timing and the, you know, the game conditioning. But, you know, don't forget, they've all been doing something, and then they got into these individual workouts, and now they're going into a training camp. They'll be just fine in a week. That would be, you know, and they're in way better shape in the offseason than most of my teammates were in the offseason, without a question.
Well, and the thing is, this now 4-month pause in the season, different players have had different routines. They've had different, you know, accessibility when it comes to ice time, when it comes to weight training. You know, the big question was, you know, the Swedes have been able to skate back in April, and it's going to be an unfair advantage. Right. You know, the level of play when we get there, whether it's July 30th or they move it to August 1st or whatever they have to do with the dates, you know, it sounds like everyone's pretty confident that if we get to that place, that it's going to be the quality of hockey is going to be really good.
Yeah, and summer hockey is very different from even when you get to training camp and you ramp it up. And obviously, we're going right into the playoffs. Well, the start is not going to be playoff hockey. It's going to be scrambly. It's going to be scrappy to start with. And it's going to take overcoming whatever in front of you. And it's going to be unusual. It just is. It's not going to be normal. Mm-hmm. You can't say you're going back to a normal. But it's a level playing field for everyone. That's somebody nobody can argue with. I don't believe anybody has an advantage of any sort right now. You know, people argue older teams, younger teams. You know, I'd love a sweet spot team, a team that was all 25 to 29 years old.
Right.
So their mental and physical skills were matching. They'd been through some stuff. They'd won, they'd lost. You know, but they still had the youth that comes with being that age. So I don't know. It's, you know, I would take some 20-year-olds, but I would take some 30-year-olds too.
Yeah.
You know, just by mentality and the way they look after themselves. And you know, but a couple things that I'm looking forward to talking to Craig about, you know, specific things when we have him. I want to know from him who is going to be the Bryson DeChambeau of the NHL. Is there going to be one in each team?
And
what's going to happen?
And out of analysts too. Who knows? Now let's.
Who's going to change the most in the NHL during this time? Who's going to come back and stun us?
That's right. Well, he always stuns us when he comes on the show. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is Craig Button. Craig, I don't know if you heard the question there from Dave Pullen. Who's going to be the Bryson DeChambeau of the NHL?
Well, you know, one thing we know about hockey is that hockey has some kind of very defined lines, and you know, players stay within those lines pretty good. You know, like, I mean, who would be the players? Like I would say PK Subban, but PK Subban's already outgoing and he's not participating. Mm-hmm. Evander Kane, he's not participating. Drew Doughty, not participating. So I think now we gotta go to our imagination and try to think, okay, who would be the Bryson DeChambeau? So let me think here.
Who would really change their game and come back? Maybe I should phrase it a little differently. I don't necessarily mean gaining 25 pounds, but who has the ability and who recognized right from the first day that they were going to change something in their game and come back and stun the world? Because that's what he's done, Craig.
Oh, I see what you mean. Sorry, I thought, yeah, sorry about that. I misunderstood. I thought about really, well, but I do think PK could have been that player if he was playing because, you know, he had a tough season with New Jersey, and I think he could have come back and got back to that level. I do think that about him. Let me see here. Jamie Benn.
Okay. Jamie Benn's a great call. A great call. Very, very interesting. Former, you know, leading scorer in the league, an MVP candidate who could come back and have an enormous impact on the game and the team and what happens.
Yep. That's a guy, that's one guy I would really pick. I mean, the stars are the stars, I think, and what you're looking at those players that, you know, need to come back and like you said, stun ya, right? Mm-hmm. So and that's why I said PK Subban. Vander would be different. He's already been a good player. Drew Doughty, obviously, I think he could have definitely raised his game to another level, to that level he was at if he was playing. So, Jamie Benn. I'm going to go with Jamie Benn. And you know who the other player I'm going to pick? Western Conference team, Nashville Predators, Ryan Johansson.
Ryan Johansson's capable.
So you're looking at untapped potential that we've seen.
Well, I wouldn't say it's untapped, Mark. We've seen it from them.
Well,
we just want more.
We just haven't seen it in recent times.
Yeah.
Yeah, who can go in and take over a series, as DeChambeau's done with the golf course? It's so hard to analogize what changes you would make. You know, is someone going to come back that's always, and Ryan Johansson would be a great example of a guy you'd say, has he always been in the maximum condition he could be in, Craig? And the answer to that would be probably not. And, you know, and the thing I think is interesting with DeChambeau is he made a decision from the very first day that golf stopped It didn't. That wasn't something he eased into. He put the pedal to the metal from the first day in what he was going to do with whatever time, and that was unknown, that he had off. And, you know, and because Ryan Johansson, if he came back in the most elite shape he's ever been in his NHL career, he can win a series for Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this, Dave, because you've been through, I mean, you were a well-conditioned athlete. Hey, listen, you're still exceptionally well-conditioned. So, you know,
not sure I've used the pandemic perfectly.
I'm just making sure that the accolades are put into the proper places.
Well done, Greg.
Yeah. And anyway, so, but like, how about that feeling of being mentally rejuvenated?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing, and you know, Dave, the grind of a season, and you know the challenges, and you, when your team isn't as like. How is Kucherov feeling in Tampa Bay? Like, right. how is Patrice Bergeron feeling in Boston? You know, older players now that have had this chance to mentally rejuvenate. How much did that help? You know, moments of the season where you really get rejuvenated mentally.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny you say that because I always feared teams who had top players who missed portions of the season, and particularly, you know, missed like significant time in January or February, and they came back so fresh. And I'll tell you two guys that could go a long way towards winning a series, and that's Shea Weber and Carey Price. And
yep.
You know, if you look at those two guys mentally and physically, totally rejuvenated, totally able to take a season that didn't go as they wanted it to, and in a very short period of time turn it around. And that makes, you know, a team like Montreal very dangerous in a short series.
What about Connor McDavid, who spent last year from the end of the 2018-19 season, you know, rehabbing that knee, really putting his full focus in there? We know what he did coming back in the season, but how does he come back now? Not only what I would think is fully healthy, but in a different frame of mind.
Wow, that could be really interesting, because a guy who rehabs all summer has missed a total summer of building his conditioning base. And that's what people don't realize about a major injury. Rehabbing is not conditioning. It's simply not.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to get back to your baseline by rehabbing. You're not taking it to a new level that a 22 or 23-year-old is capable of doing. So I think there's going to be so many great storylines here,
yeah.
Craig, as we get back into it. And every single series I look at, and I'm starting to look at the series, and it's just really exciting, every single one I look at, to see what, you know, what it could bring.
Yeah, you know, for me, you know, and I know you've been asked this, and Mark, you've been asked this, but, you know, one of the interesting things for me, when the season paused on March 12th, teams had done their work, you know, leading up to the trade deadline, making their transactions both ways, you know, adding players and subtracting players. And, you know, never does an NHL coach have an opportunity to regroup after 4 months or so with the same group that he left off, because in the off season, 7-8 players usually leave. So when you've maxed out, you know, from a management point of view, what you think gives your team a best chance to win, you know, my feeling is that the teams that are the best teams, I think, now have the best chance to win the cup. What do you guys think?
Well, it sounds like, because I'm hearing two sides of things from so many in the game, that we could see total chaos and that upsets are going to happen left, right, and center. Or I'm hearing kind of what I think that you're leaning towards. The better teams are going to be the ones who are suited for this unpredictable season. And don't discount the teams who have done really well this year. Like because we assume that it's going to be this wide open November like hockey, and teams like the Montreal Canadiens can ride their goaltender, or maybe Chicago upsets Edmonton. Like, which one of those two scenarios do you lean towards when you look at this restart?
Neither one. I really don't, and I'll tell you why. Like, I mean, John Cooper is coming back to the same team he left in March. Bruce Cassidy's coming back to the same team he left in March, and guess what? Claude Julien is coming back to the same team that he left after they traded Kovalchuk mm-hmm. and Nate Thompson and Nick Cousins. And, you know, like, listen, you know, you look at Chicago and Jeremy Colleton, he's coming back to a team without Robin Lehner and without Eric Gustafson. And that's what I think the teams that position themselves that, you know, to try to be better, you know, with players that aren't into, that are now healthy. I mean, how good is Hedman going to be? How good is Steve Stamkos going to be coming back, right? How good is Seth Jones going to be coming back? I don't put Columbus in that same category. But, you know, all these players are coming back to a team that's already good. See, I don't think there's going to be chaos. I think we could see absolute sweeps, you know, once, and I'm not talking in the play-in round. I'm talking about once we get into the round of 16.
Yeah, if you look at the East in particular, I love teams that have been through a lot, and Boston, Washington, and Tampa Bay have been through a lot. And you know, and the cores of those teams have won. They've gone to conference finals, if not the Stanley Cup finals. If not, you know, two of those three teams have won a Stanley Cup. And been humbled along the way doing it, you know, in many respects. You don't, if you look back a couple of years, and Tampa Bay didn't make the playoffs a couple of years ago, as crazy as that sounds. And so, you know, but it's going to be the way it starts. When I speak about chaos, it's that first, second night of once we get to the first round of the playoffs and the pressures that come with that just for those teams if they get down a game or two games into it and to see how they react. Well, I'd way rather have, you know, Patrice Bergeron and Chara sitting in my locker room and Brad Marchand and see how they react than I would, you know, a group of untested players.
Oh no, yeah, no question about it. I think the teams like Chicago, like Montreal, I think they have to create an environment of chaos in the way they play. If they want to talk about playing with structure and everything, I think they're doomed. I think they have to create the environment of chaos to try to unsettle Edmonton and Pittsburgh, respectively, to give themselves any type of chance. Because if it comes straight down to the skill and the team base that they have, I don't see any chance for them to win. Or I should say, I see very little chance for them to win.
Craig Button joining us on Overdrive. We are taking small steps back to normalcy when we're watching Craig Button on television talking about hockey, which was the case with you and Gino and Jermaine Franklin yesterday. You broke down the Flames and the Jets, and I know you're doing that for the Canadian teams in the NHL. For this Maple Leaf Blue Jackets series, what's a big storyline that fascinates you as we get closer to this playoff series?
Well, here's what I would say. You know, we know that the Toronto Maple Leafs are a really, you know, offensively gifted team, a high-scoring team. You know, we know that. The Columbus Blue Jackets are one of the best defensive teams. Now, last year, they summarily dispatched the Tampa Bay Lightning, who were a better-scoring team and a better offensive team than the Toronto Maple Leafs have shown to be. So, you know, we talk about power play and skill and everything. I think it comes down to the Columbus Blue Jackets. They get in your face. They get in your space. They make you earn everything. They don't beat themselves. Okay, so that's great. You know that. The Toronto Maple Leafs have this skill. What are you going to do with your skill? How are you going to dial into the same competitive mindset? We're not going to give up the puck. We're going to win the puck. We're not going to beat ourselves. We're going to make sure that we are doing the essential details of the game. Where you think about St. Louis last year. I mean, they never wavered in the way they were going to play in terms of the puck was going back below the goal line in the offensive zone. They were not going to create opportunities for the other team. And they still took seven games to beat the Boston Bruins. And that's what it takes. There's lots of skill in the league, and there's been lots of skilled teams that got dispatched. And look at the Detroit Red Wings in the early 90s, in 95, 96, with all the skill. It wasn't until they really dialed into the details and understanding that every single shift is going to require a determined, focused effort. And because you don't know what shift is going to turn in to be a difference maker in the game. That, to me, is where the Toronto Maple Leafs have to get their mindset. We know they have skill, but it's about how they get themselves in that mindset to maximize the skill. We know when they turn it up, they can be really good, but we also see when they're not focused, they're really sloppy.
And, Craig, so much of the focus, you know, as of late with the pending CBA that will be lengthened, you know, hopefully in the next day it'll be ratified, and you know, has been on the salary cap remaining flat and what that does to a team that looks like the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yet as I look at this playoff series, I'm fully assuming the bigs are going to be the bigs. Marner and Tavares and Willie Nylander and Austin Matthews will do what they do. I'm really intrigued to see if Ilya Mikheyev can come back healthy, if Alex Killorn can play at the highest level he's played at, Kasperi Kapanen, Andreas Johnsson. Those players that are at the next level for the Leafs have to be really, really good. Just as they have to fit in financially moving forward, that's all the focus to me turns on whether that group of players can provide the support to the bigs who I assume are going to do what they do.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it, you know, it, using your term, the bigs, then to the next group. You got to do your part to the next group, right? Rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. Try to do that for 19 wins because, you know what, to win the Stanley Cup requires exactly what you described, Dave. You know it. You've been there. And without it, you get dispatched pretty quickly. And when you do get into that rhythm, you know, not that it becomes easier. Dale Hunter has a saying, the hard way is the easy way. And what he means by that is, you know what, when you don't want to cut corners and you focus in on the task at hand and you dig in, you know, it's hard, but it becomes easier as you do it more. When you want to take the easy way, it becomes really hard to win.
Craig, you always need leadership to be successful in the playoffs. It doesn't matter what sport you're playing. But can you especially say that in these circumstances when you're trying to be a responsible team, doing your training camp in your selective city, and then making the travel arrangements to get to the hubs, the team that shows maybe the most leadership is going to be the one that's rewarded at the end?
Yeah, you know, I look at leadership a little bit differently, okay? And I think that every player has to lead himself. Every player has to be accountable, number one, to himself, because he's got all these other players around him that are counting on him. And, you know, I really believe this idea of one or two or three or four leaders just showing the way. Like, you know what? Everybody has to lead and lead themselves. Be focused, be dialed in, and understand that what I do is important. And whether that be in your sleep, in your training, in your nutrition, in your practice habits, in your game habits, not taking penalties and everything, like, again, if it just came down to just having the best leaders, then the best leaders would always win, and that's just not. There's so many outstanding leaders in the game that don't always win, and you know. So I think you create an environment where everybody knows that they're part of something much bigger than themselves, and you know, obviously there's people that are gonna take the lead in that and set an example in that regard, but That's how you it just kind of continuously goes down the line. And Mark and Dave will tell you this. Dave was a captain of the league and a great leader, right? But he'll tell you this. There's a lot of players on teams that might not be recognized as leaders, might not wear a letter, but are tremendous leaders because they might take a smaller group and lead that group and tell them, hey, here's what you got to do, and you know, and how it works in the concept of the group. So, you know, it would be great if just one guy or two guys just stood up and said, here's the way it goes. You need a lot of people, in fact, everybody, to, number one, lead themselves. And then you need to manage these different groups. And a lot of teams that have the leadership down the group, Dave talks about the bigs and then how everybody else, it also goes down and setting an example. Hey, listen, you know what? The backup goaltender getting into the net and being serious about helping the team in a practice, you know, I'm going to be really focused in on making it hard to score on me. Like, that matters. Mm-hmm. That's leadership.
You know, Craig, some of the focus, and we'll just change it for a second here and point it at the coaches. You know, when it came out and it said there will be only, you know, the mandatory or the minimum of three coaches will be included in that 52-person group, which is a small number these days on coaching staffs in the National Hockey League, but you know, when you look at the temptation to overcoach in a series in which you've had a couple of months that you knew if we come back and played that you were going to face that team, the temptation to overcoach will be immense with some of the guys.
You know it, Dave. You know as well as anybody, yeah, because that's exactly, you know, you hate to say they've had too much time to think.
They've had too much time to think.
They have. Yeah. One of the things that I said that I'm really interested in seeing is, you know, coaches, the systems of team play and structure and everything that goes with it, I want to watch the coaches that are going to come out and be creative. They're going to throw the Philadelphia special at opponents, and you know, going to do the onside kick, you know, at the beginning of the second half, you know, to catch an opponent off guard in the Super Bowl. That's what I want to see. I want to see, you know, how much creativity some of these coaches are going to implement into their team play, because they've also had a great opportunity to think about things a little bit differently. We know that a lot of coaches will never think about things differently, but I'm going to be watching for the ones that have been, because I think there's some out there that we talk about players that might surprise. I think we have an opportunity to see some coaches that might surprise.
I'm looking forward to the stories that come out of this postseason and what teams did to be successful behind the scenes and how they got a little creative. But should be fun. We're getting closer and closer to it. Training camp, tentatively, will start on Monday. Craig, always appreciate you coming on this show. All the best to you and the family.
Oh, yeah, all the best to you guys. I have one last question for you.
Okay.
You know, everybody was enthralled by the Last Dance, you know, with the Chicago Bulls run there, right? I hope that the NHL or an individual team or somebody gets somebody behind the scenes in their content creation group that starts filming this. And in 10 years' time, we have the Hub City Dance or the COVID-19 dance or something.
Great call. I mean,
how compelling would that be to watch back 10 years from now and
Great
see
call.
What went on?
Yeah, because let's hope that it never happens again, right? So it's it's the one chance.
But just to, I'm taking liberty with the pandemic and naming it. But like, when you think about what happened with the Bulls and how they taped that whole year and they sat on it for over 20 years, and we look back on it and we're fascinated. How fascinating would this be to go into this time, in this period of time in our lives that is unprecedented, and see what happens?
Yeah. Well, let's hope that someone's able to do it, and Craig gets his cut from it. thank you so much, Craig.
See you guys. Have a great day.
There you have it. Craig Button joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. The showroom is open. They're taking the necessary steps to provide a safe environment for every guest. Just visit Maple Toyota next to Wonderland or buy online at mapletoyota.com. Mike Golic Jr. from ESPN joins us next on Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4.
Now, back to Overdrive.
Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on television on TSN 4. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes alongside Dave Pullen. And happy to welcome our next guest from ESPN. It's Mike Golic Jr. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm good. I feel a little left out. I'm not going to lie. I'm the one person in this conversation who did not play a varsity sport for Notre Dame. So I can step aside if you two just want to, you know, catch up and sing the fight song and what your best memories of being a part of the Fighting Irish.
I was wondering why the leprechaun outfit that is underneath my clothes at all times started peeking out. So it makes sense. It's like the spider sense that starts tingling whenever we're near.
Yeah, the only difference is we're there at a little bit different time, and I was there with both his uncles and his dad, so a little bit of a gap there, and he was there just overlapping with my daughters.
Oh, wow. God help you if you were there with my uncles and dad then. I always say what I say to everyone I find out who's there around that time. I'm sorry, and I hope they didn't throw up on you anywhere.
It was a very different time, Mike, a very different time.
Yeah, well,
that's what it sounds like. The 5 points sound like they were a good time.
Yeah, well, and you could say it's a very different time in 2020 for obvious reasons, but the big news this afternoon, the Big Ten, the show must go on in a way. Their plan is to play in the fall, play a conference-only schedule. I've heard you a little bit on ESPN radio. I'm going to assume that you're not surprised at this, but give us your take on college football continuing to play despite what's going on in America.
Yeah, it's not surprising. I mean, we see what draws all this stuff. It's the money and all of it. Once the Ivies made their decision, it became a lot clearer, a league where the revenue brought in by football isn't used to buoy the entire athletic department in a way that makes them really dependent on it. And so once they decided, all right, this is not worth the risk, we're going to move this maybe to the spring, but at the very least delay it through the fall, we saw this all for what it clearly is. And so now you're going to see the rest of these schools start to give every inch they can along the way, whether that's playing conference-only schedules or whatever this starts to look like, pushing the season back, ultimately to preserve this gigantic cash cow that keeps the entire industry afloat in all this one. So I'm not surprised that college football is continuing to try and push forward in whatever form it looks like. I just think we're still a long way from whatever the final form is going to be.
Mike, it's really hard for people to fathom the impact that football has on their own institutions and how much they support all of the other sports that go on, and up to 36 or 37 sports played male and female at a lot of the big universities. But a statement that did really surprise me, Tay, was Stanford, who you always viewed as one of the wealthiest schools by far, announcing that they were dropping 11 Division I varsity sports.
Yeah, so the Stanford issue is interesting here, certainly telling. I think a lot of other schools took notice, because you're right. I think you're talking about a $23-plus billion endowment, which also is a reminder, endowments are a little more complicated than we all think of. It's not just a treasure trove of cash that the university can tap into at any time in all this. And with Stanford, this is them getting out ahead of it. Yes, they do have one of the larger Division I groups of varsity sports on their campus. They've been supporting more sports for a while, and even before COVID-19 kicked in, we're losing money on a lot of these in a way that was probably going to force them to make a move like this sooner or later. They were punching a bit above their weight class, and that's the thing for me that's more telling of where we're all going, is if Stanford, one of the schools that we probably look at as more responsible, a better balance of academics and athletics, has also overextended themselves athletically, that who's to say that a lot of these institutions that are much more identified for their athletic prowess haven't been doing the same at maybe an even worse clip. The cash reserves on hand for a lot of state universities aren't up to the percentage that they're supposed to be in a lot of these situations in their budget. And so you're going to see a lot of people have to make uncomfortable decisions in this, because the entire world of athletics got drunk on power, kept betting on growth in the future, and never stopped to think that maybe this was getting too big and too unwieldy. No one could have predicted this, but at the same time, these are the situations and the risks you're open to when you live too large and too hard the way college sports have for a while now.
Mike Golic from ESPN joining us on Overdrive. So it looks like the power conferences will at least attempt a season and attempt to begin it in the fall. The NFL is trying to do the same thing. What is your confidence level like that both of these football leagues will be able to finish these seasons?
Very, very low, and I'm glad you chose the word finish, because start, people keep asking that one. I'm like, it's easy to start all this stuff. Like, they got enough money and resources on a lot of these levels to start all of it. The big-time Power 5 schools are going to have the kind of money needed to test all of their, especially the football team, players on a close enough and frequent enough basis to be effective. The NFL certainly has that kind of money and a lot less bodies to do it with. But the finish is, again, like all of this, predicated on things outside of their control. You can only do so much in building up the framework of the house that is football, the foundation of it, with testing, with all these things in place, the protocols, trying to make sure that the players understand their responsibility and all this. But again, because football is a sport that can't exist in a bubble, you are beholden to the outside world. And what we've seen, especially in the United States and this country, is the outside world and our society has not responded in a way that seems like an environment that's going to be ready to foster this anytime soon. You look at the Bundesliga, you look at the English Premier League, you look at all these places that have been able to have success so far in the early going, bringing team sports back, and you see surrounding countries that have done their job and what they've been asked to do to try and eradicate this virus. And so that's the one thing, is I have faith in these leagues to get together and use their resources the right way. I just don't have faith in any of us.
Mike, and through all this and all the tough talk about financials and what's going to start and when, all of a sudden we're, you know, welcomed last week with an enormous signing, the largest signing in any team sport, to a young superstar with 2 years left. I think the timing caught everybody surprised. The magnitude caught everybody surprised, because no one was making any sort of financial decisions of any scope in any business. And to do this with Patrick Mahomes certainly caught a lot of people off guard last week.
Yeah, it did. This is one that by all the public things that we had heard sounded like it was still a year away. But it's a reminder, too, when you look at the reaction in the middle of a global pandemic when so many people are obviously on hard times and it's a difficult financial situation for a lot, I heard almost no one complain about what we heard there. This is that obvious of a choice. We all expected Patrick Mahomes, being the best at the premier position in North American sports, to get paid accordingly in all this. Now, it was still surprising because it's 10 years in the NFL, which never happens, and it's all these different guarantee mechanisms that we had never heard of before. But at the end of the day, the best guy got paid like it, and that's the world, the meritocracy in sports that so many people want to believe is the case for everyone. And it's not by any stretch. It's position-dependent. It's timing-dependent. Mm-hmm. But every once in a while, you get the best guy that lands in an organization that is a healthy organization, one that values the player, one that has a good relationship with them and understands what they have at that position and doesn't want to play games with them. When it happens, it's a beautiful thing because seeing young people get handed a life-changing sum of money for doing right, and by all accounts, Patrick Mahomes is a guy that does right in every sense of the word. I think we all can't help but smile, and hell, do we need that right now.
So since we're talking about a lot of money here, and you're right, like the money will drive these leagues to either try to restart or start a season in the case of the NFL and college football. When you look at the NBA, though, and not to say that the money's not a factor there, it obviously is, but is it almost as important for the players to show their power and their leadership and have LeBron James leading that charge and others like him?
I think you can say something for the effect of having sports back, having the prominent names we're used to. Certainly someone like LeBron, who's leveraged his platform in a way that few athletes in history have or will, and has inspired so many others to try and emulate that. But, you know, I think Sean Doolittle for the Nationals said sports is a reward for a functioning society. And so there's part of me that worries that these leagues that come back and maybe have success indicate to others that it's okay to exhale a little bit and relax. And while we see, you know, the death rates are certainly falling, hospitalizations hopefully can fall with that, there's still a rise in the number of cases, and there's a lot of risk that's associated with that. And so I hesitate for anything to allow people to put their foot and take their foot off the gas too much, but there's also the mental side of this, and I think that lift of having something familiar like that back around in some of those names might balance out the scale and can maybe justify, you know, any moral qualms I might have about that.
Mike, you're doing an awesome job at ESPN. Congratulations on the recent promotion. I know your father has been such a big role model to you, and he's obviously etched out an incredible career following another pretty good career on the gridiron. I actually do have a question about your uncle, though. And I'm 36, so one of the shows I grew up watching was Saved by the Bell. Did you grow up watching your uncle, and was that not the coolest thing ever?
So I actually kind of missed that generation timing-wise when it was a thing. And so I knew about it, and I saw some of the episodes, and obviously his name was Mike on the show, which was funny because that's my father's name. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine the confusion that that causes. But this is God's honest truth. My Uncle Bob played, I think, about 14 years in the NFL. My dad played 9. Both of them were college captains at Notre Dame. Both enjoyed those long, fruitful careers in the NFL. My dad obviously has put a 20-year radio career on top of that. And still, every time someone sees my last name in public for the first time, they ask if my uncle is that guy on the college years. It is remarkable. It is always the thing that people go to first. So it is the power of popular culture reminding us that sports might not be the be-all, end-all.
Well, and we're showing a picture on TSN4. There's your uncle with AC Slater and Screech. So
he's looking good.
I'm sure, you know, with all the helmets that he has in his house and trophies, he's got a picture like that up on the mantle. But Mike, again, love your work on ESPN. It does get played here on TSN 1050 a lot. We appreciate you coming on the show, and all the best as you continue on.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
There's Mike Golic Jr. from ESPN Radio, a former star of Notre Dame, just like my co-host today is a former star of Notre Dame. He's not a former star coach, so I'll give you that, Dave, as well.
No, you know, I was there with his Uncle Bob was a great All-American middle linebacker and actually got moved to the offensive side of the ball when he got to the NFL, but he was a great, great college player. And then his Uncle Greg and his dad, Mike, came in when I was a senior. And so overlapped and have seen each other over the years. But quite a family and quite a tradition at Notre Dame for that Golic family.
And a shout out to Matt King, who's working the television side of the show, for getting that picture up as quickly as he did.
Pulling that up.
Because there was no pre-planning on asking that question. I just thought, I might as well. Saved by the bell. It's a, that was a guilty pleasure when you were a kid.
You know, what a run his dad had at ESPN, too. You know, 20 years of morning show with started with Mike Greenberg and then finished with Trey Wingo, I guess. And quite a long-standing run there in the morning show.
Right. And sounds like he'll continue on with college football. So we'll continue to hear his voice. But you're right. So good. Someone who's so good when it comes to football, Dave Naylor, will join us during the 6 o'clock hour as Overdrive continues here on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4.
Now, back to Overdrive.
TSN 1050 is supporting the launch of Legends Go Live in support of the Princess Margaret. Nearly one in two Canadians will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. That's why this July, more than 20 legends are going live to support the Princess Margaret, one of the top five cancer research centers in the world. Overdrive continuing here. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes this week alongside Dave Poulin. Dave, we were just talking a lot about your career at Notre Dame, both as a player and as a coach. I'm going to assume that you've spent a lot of time in the city of Chicago, and specifically the north part of the city, at Wrigley Field.
I have.
Now, have you ever been on the rooftops to watch a Cubs game?
I have. Yeah, I've been outside the building. You know, so you're across the street, and those have become very, very elaborate. They're almost mini super sweet. So they would take a building. They're building bleachers on top of buildings across the street from the outfield.
Right.
And it's a very small stadium, obviously. It's a tiny little stadium. It's right in a neighborhood. And they used to be literally someone putting lawn chairs on their roof and watching the games. Mm-hmm. And then they sold the space on the top of these buildings. And they've built really elaborate structures that, you know, that emulate super boxes like across the street from the building. So that's where fans will be potentially watching Cubs baseball games. No fans allowed in the building.
You saw that. So for three,
but I did see that.
Yeah, $350. Fans can watch Cubs games in person from the rooftop patio access across the street. And as
but these are really elaborate, Mark. They're really, like, they're, it's almost like they've all been professionally done.
I have been to Wrigley Field a couple of times, and I've even been to that part of the city when a game's not going on. It's I love it, and I think anyone, I would suggest anybody going to Chicago needs to go to that part of the city, and it's so unique, and it's become much more about big business, as you know, the sports world has trended towards. So you have bigger hotels now in that area, but that is always an interesting part, and that is a way that teams can maybe, because the Cubs, I know there was a battle in terms of the revenue that those buildings. So I correct me if I'm wrong. I do believe the Cubs do get some of that revenue. So
yeah, I'm not sure about that. I think that was what the goal was for the Cubs to get it, but they're privately owned buildings and privately owned setups, so pretty hard for them to dictate. And then there was a question of whether they built something to block them on the top of the stadiums,
right?
You know, to be real poor sports.
Yeah, which would be too bad because of just how
it's
great
part of,
that park is.
Literally part of the culture. It's a neighborhood. And for those that haven't been there, you have plunked a building right in the middle of a neighborhood, like streets and houses and bars and cafes going in every direction. I'm trying to think of an exact neighborhood. You'd be putting it right in Queen West or in the Danforth. Just drop a baseball stadium right in the middle.
Well, as a Hamilton native, it's kind of like Iverwind Stadium.
Sure it is.
Or Tim Hortons Field. Now there's a lot more that's built up around Wrigley Field, and you can have a whole day just in that part of the city, and it's great. But you know, if the Jays play in Toronto, and I know not everyone's on board with that, maybe there's some condo viewing parties and there's some admission at the door of certain condos. People,
yeah, there could be. You can get some visuals inside there for sure. You would say in the past that the hotel would be prime location, but obviously the teams will be using those.
And it sounds like even if you were able to get one of those rooms, that they're blocking off the windows of the hotel. And a lot of reporters are inside the building for the intra-squad game that will be played at 7 o'clock. And the pictures that we're seeing of the stadium, roof's open, but it looks like the restaurant and the hotel are blocked off by like a curtain or some sort of tarp. So
right, just a huge empty building and a handful of reporters telling us that it's a huge empty building.
Yeah, exactly. And as we joked with Gregor Chisholm, if they really want to space out the media, well, they can definitely space out the media in that place.
No question.
Coming up next, Dave Naylor, our CFL insider, on what is the future for that league this season. Will they try to play in a hub? Will they try to play a six-game season? And also, Jack Armstrong, speaking of hubs, the Raptors in the hub in Orlando. Overdrive continuing here on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4.